upstairs. Mia frowned at her. Is something wrong, Lexi? It's okay if I say you're my best friend, right? Lexi stared at the empty place where he'd been, feeling unsettled. He'd smiled at her, hadn't he? At first, for a second. What had she done wrong? Lexi, is it okay if I tell people we're friends? Lexi let out the breath she'd been holding. She forced her attention away from the stairs. Seeing Mia's nervousness, she realized what was important here, and it wasn't a guy like Zack. No wonder he confused her. He would always be incomprehensible to a girl who'd grown up in the weeds. What mattered was Mia, and this fragile beginning of their friendship. Of course, she said, smiling. For once, she didn't care about her teeth. She was pretty sure Mia wouldn't care. You can tell everyone. The media room was full of kids, as usual. Some women might be overwhelmed by the noise and mayhem, but not Jude. Years ago, back when the twins were starting sixth grade, she'd made a conscious effort to make her house welcoming. She wanted the kids to hang out here. She'd known herself well enough to know that she didn't want to be dropping her kids off into other women's care. She wanted to be the one in charge. To that end, she'd designed the upstairs carefully, and it had worked. Some days there were 15 kids here, eating their way through her snack provisions like locusts. But she knew where her children were, and she knew they were safe. Now, as she unlocked the great room's series of wood-framed pocket doors and opened them wide, she could hear movement upstairs. The floors groaned, and footsteps thudded through the house. For once, Mia wasn't hiding out from all that horseplay in the media room. She wasn't locked in her bedroom, watching The Little Mermaid or Beauty and the Beast or another of her Disney comfort movies. She was out on the beach, sitting on the sandy edge with Lexi beside her. A heavy woolen blanket wrapped them together, black and blonde hair tangled together in the salty air. They'd been sitting out there for hours, talking. Just the sight of it, of her daughter talking to a friend, made Jude smile. She had waited so long for this, hoped for it so fervently. And yet, now that it had happened, she couldn't help worrying just a little. Mia was so fragile, so needy. It was too easy to hurt her. And after the thing with Haley, Mia couldn't take another friend's betrayal. Jude needed to learn a little bit about Lexi, just to know who her daughter was hanging out with. It was a parenting choice that had yielded good results over the years. The more she knew about her kids' lives, the better mother she could be to them. She stepped out onto the patio. The breeze immediately plucked at her hair, whipped strands across her face. Without bothering to step into any of the shoes that lay cluttered outside the door, she walked barefooted across the flagstones, past the collection of dark woven outdoor furniture. At the edge, between the grass and the sand, a giant cedar tree rose tall and straight into the pellucid blue sky. As she approached the girl, she heard Mia say, "I want to try out for the school play, but I know I won't get a part. Sarah and Jolie always get the leads." "I was totally scared to talk to you today," Lexi said. "What if I hadn't?" "It's no good to be afraid of stuff. You should go for it." Mia turned to Lexi. "Would you come with me to tryouts? The other theater kids, they're so serious. They don't like me." Lexi nodded, her face solemn with understanding. "They don't matter." Jude came up to Mia, stood beside her daughter. "Hey, girls." She put a hand on Mia's slim shoulder. Mia grinned up at her. "I'm going to try out for Once Upon a Mattress. Lexi's gonna come with me. I probably won't get a part, but..." "That's wonderful," Jude said, pleased by this development. "Well, I better take Lexi home now. Dad will be home in an hour.
Can I come with?
Mia asked. No, you have a paper due on Friday. You might as well get started on it. Jude answered.
You're already checking the website? It's the first day of school, Mia said, her shoulders slumping.
You need to stay on track. Grades matter in high school. She looked down at Lexi. You ready?
I can take the bus, Lexi said. You don't have to drive me.
The bus? Jude frowned. In all her years of parenting on this island, she had never had a child make that offer. Most said they could call their moms. None ever offered to take the bus. Where would one even catch a bus around here? You're not taking the bus home. Lexi unwound herself from the red and white striped wool blanket. When she stood up, it slumped to the sand.
Really, Mrs. Faraday, you don't need to drive me home.
Please, Lexi, call me Jude. When you say Mrs. Faraday, I think of my mother, and that's not a good thing. Mia, go tell Zach I'm starting the drive. Ask him who else needs a ride.
10 minutes later, Jude backed the Escalade out of the four-car garage and put it in park. 5 kids shoved their way into the plush interior, talking over each other as they buckled up their seatbelts. In the front passenger seat, Lexi sat quietly, staring straight ahead. Jude admonished Zach and Mia to start on their homework, and they drove away. The route was so familiar, she could have driven it in her sleep. Left on Beach Drive, right on Knight Road, left on the highway. At the top of Viewcrest, she pulled into her best friend's driveway.
Here you go, Bryson. Tell Molly we're still on for lunch this week.
He mumbled some kind of answer and got out of the car. For the next 20 minutes, she drove the standard route around the island, letting off one kid after another. Finally, she turned to Lexi.
Okay, hon, where to?
Isn't that a bus stop?
Jude smiled. I am not putting you on a bus. Now, where to, Lexi?
Port George, Lexi said.
Oh,
Jude said, surprised. Most of the kids at Pine High lived on the island, and really, the other side of the bridge was a whole different world. Geographically, only about 300 feet separated Pine Island from Port George, but there were many ways to calculate distance. On the Port George side, manufactured homes sat on untended lots, many of them with rusting cars or appliances in the yard. In summer, fireworks stands sprang up along the highway, and just last year, the tribe had begun construction on a new waterfront casino. Port George was where nice, upstanding boys from Pine Island came to buy beer and cigarettes at the mini-mart, using fake IDs they made on old magic cards. There was all kinds of trouble in the schools here. She drove out to the highway and headed off the island.
Turn there, Lexi said, about a mile from the bridge. In fact, you can let me out here. I can walk the rest of the way.
I don't think so.
Jude followed the signs to the Chief South Mobile Home Park. From there, Lexi directed her down a winding road to a tiny plot of land, overgrown with weeds and grass, where a fading yellow double-wide sat on concrete blocks. The front door was an ugly shade of blue and cracked up the middle, and the curtains inside were ragged and unevenly hemmed. Rust grew like caterpillars along the seams. Deep, muddy ruts in the grass showed where a car was usually parked. Jude parked at the edge of the grass and turned off the engine. This was hardly what she'd expected.
Is your mom home?
I hate to just drop you off. I'd actually like to meet her.
Lexi looked at Jude. My mom died 3 years ago. I live with my Aunt Eva now.
Oh, honey,
Jude said. She knew how it felt to lose a parent. Her father had died when Jude was 7. The world had become a dark and frightening place, and for years, She'd been unsure of her place in it.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I know how difficult it must be for you.
Lexi shrugged.
How long have you lived with your aunt?
4 days.
4 days? But where were you?
Foster care, Lexi said quietly, sighing. My mom was a heroin addict. Sometimes we lived in our car. So I guess you don't want me hanging around with Mia anymore. I understand, really. I wish my mom had cared who I hung out with.
Jude frowned. None of this was what she'd expected. It did worry her, all of it. But she didn't want to be that kind of woman, the kind who judged a person by his or her circumstance. And right now, Lexi looked as beaten as any teenager Jude had ever seen. Everything about the girl radiated defeat. No doubt she'd been disappointed a lot in her life.
I'm not like my mom, Lexi said earnestly. The need in the girl's blue eyes was unmistakable. Jude believed her, but still, there was potential danger here. Mia was fragile, easily led astray. Jude couldn't simply ignore that, no matter how sorry she felt for this girl.
I'm not like my mother either, but...
What?
Mia is shy. I'm sure you already know that. She doesn't make friends easily, and she worries too much about being liked. She's always been that way. And last year, she had her heart broken, not by a boy. It was worse than that. A girl, Haley, befriended her. For a few months, they were inseparable. Mia was as happy as I've ever seen her. But the truth was that Haley had her sights set on Zack, and he fell into her trap. He didn't know how it would upset Mia. Anyway, Haley dumped Mia for Zack, and when Zack lost interest, Haley refused to come to the house anymore. Mia was so hurt she stopped talking for almost a month. I was really worried about her.
Why are you telling me this?
I guess because if you're going to be her friend, she needs to know she can count on you. I'd like to know that, too.
I would never do anything to hurt her, Lexi promised. Jude thought of all the dangers this friendship could pose to her daughter, and all the benefits, and she weighed them in her mind, as if this decision were hers to make, although she knew it wasn't. A 14-year-old girl could make her own friends. But Jude could make it easy for Mia and Lexi to stay friends, or difficult. What was best for Mia? When she looked at Lexi, the answer came easily. Jude was a mother, first, last, and always. How could she turn away from a child in need? And her daughter desperately needed a friend.
I'm taking Mia into the city on Saturday for manicures, a girl's day. Would you like to join us?
I can't, Lexi said. I haven't got a job yet. Money's tight. But thanks.
My treat, Jude said easily. And I won't take no for an answer.
Chapter 3, 2003. The last 3 years had both worn Jude down and sharpened her. She hadn't known how terrifying life could be until the first time she handed Zack and Mia car keys and watched them drive away. From that moment on, she'd begun to be afraid for her kids. Everything scared her. Rain, wind, snow, darkness, other drivers, too many kids in a car, music played too loud. She'd issued her kids cell phones and instituted new rules, curfews, required phones, accountability. She paced when they were minutes late and didn't breathe easily until they were safely back in bed. She'd thought that was the worst of it, the freedom that came with a driver's license. But now she knew better. It had all been a prelude to this, senior year of high school. The year had just begun and already it was a pressure cooker,
a Rubik's Cube of deadlines and paperwork. College loomed on the horizon like a nuclear cloud, tainting every breath of air. Years of driving back and forth to sporting events, practices, play rehearsals, and performances was nothing compared to this. On the wall above her desk, she had two giant calendars, one marked Zach and the other Mia. Every college deadline was written in red ink. Every test date was in bold-faced type. Jude had spent years studying admission statistics and reading about the various universities, gauging which would be best for her kids. Getting into college would be a cakewalk for Zach. He had entered senior year with a 3.96 GPA and a perfect SAT score. He could go almost anywhere he wanted. Mia was a different story. Her grades were good, but not great. Same with her SAT. Even so, she had set her heart on the prestigious University of Southern California Drama School. Jude had begun to lose sleep about it all. She lay in bed at night going through admission statistics and criteria in her head until she felt sick. She was constantly figuring out how to make her daughter's dream come true. It wasn't easy to get one kid into an ultra-competitive school, and Jude needed to get two in. God knew the twins had to go to college together. Any other possibility was unthinkable. Mia needed her brother beside her. And now, as if all that pressure weren't bad enough, the words she'd been dreading had just been said aloud. Party. Jude drew in a deep and steadying breath. She was seated at the dinner table with her family gathered around her. It was a Friday night in early October. The sky was the color of bruised plums.
Well,
Zach said from his place at the table,
can we go or not? Molly and Tim are letting Bryson go.
Mia was beside her brother. Her blonde hair had been braided wet and dried into crimpy zigzags. In the past 3 years, she had blossomed into a true beauty, with flawless skin and a smile that was marquee bright. Her friendship with Lexi had stayed as true as magnetic north, and it had given Mia a new confidence. Her daughter still wasn't brave or extremely social, but she was happy, and that meant the world to Jude.
What about you, Mia? Do you want to go to this party?
Mia shrugged. Zach wants to go. It was the answer Jude had expected. They were a pair, these two, in every way. Where one went, the other followed. It had been that way from the moment of their birth, and probably before. One could hardly breathe without the other.
Did you hear that, Miles?
Jude said.
The kids want to go to a party at Kevin Eisner's house. Is there a problem with that?
Miles asked, pouring hollandaise sauce on his grilled asparagus.
The Eisners are in Paris, if I'm not mistaken, Jude said, seeing the twins flinch in unison.
Small island, she reminded them.
Kevin's aunt is there, though, Zach said. It's not like no adult is around.
Totally,
Mia added, nodding. Jude sat back. She'd known this moment was coming, of course. She'd been a teenager herself, and senior year was the holy grail of teenhood. So, she knew what it meant when seniors wanted to party. She'd had endless conversations with the kids about alcohol, told them repeatedly how dangerous it could be, and they swore not to be interested in drinking. But she wasn't a fool. Neither was she the kind of woman who pretended her children were perfect. What mattered to her was protecting her children from all the risks associated with adolescence, even those of their own making. She could say no, but then they might defy her, and wouldn't they be more in danger then?
I'll call Kevin's aunt, she said slowly. Make sure an adult is supervising the party.
Oh, my God, Mia whined. Way to totally humiliate us. We're not children.
Really, Mom, Zach said. You know you can trust us. I'd never drink and drive.
I'd prefer it if you'd promise never to drink, she said. He looked at her.
I might drink one beer. It won't kill me. You want me to lie to you? I thought that wasn't how we rolled in this family.
Her own words thrown back at her with deadly accuracy. The price for honesty with your kids was that often you learned what you'd rather not. The way Jude saw it, there were two parenting choices. Ask for honesty and try to roll with unwanted truths, or stick your head in the sand and be lied to. Zach's honesty was a reason to trust him.
I'll think about it, she said in a forceful enough voice to end the conversation.
The rest of the meal passed quickly. As soon as they cleared the table, the kids put the dishes in the dishwasher and then ran upstairs. Jude knew they were getting ready for the party. They assumed victory. She'd seen it in their eyes.
I don't know, she said to Miles.
They stood side by side at the picture window, staring out at the darkening night. The sound had turned graphite, and the sky was the color of a bruised plum.
How do we stop them from drinking and keep them safe? Chaining them to a wall would work. Too bad the state frowns on that.
Very funny. She looked up at him. We can't stop them from drinking, you know that. If not tonight, then some night they'll get drunk. That's just the way it is. So, what do we do to protect them?
Maybe we should have a party here. We could take the kids' keys and make sure everyone stayed safe. We could make sure they don't drink too much.
No. We'd be risking everything we own. Not to mention, if someone got hurt, we'd be responsible. And you know teenagers, they're like bacteria. They multiply too fast to see, and you can't keep them in your sights. I can't believe you'd even suggest it.
Jude knew he was right, but it didn't help.
Do you even remember high school? Because I sure do. Keggers at Morrow Farm were a weekly occurrence, and we drove home.
You have to trust them, Jude. They have to start making some decisions. Mia's smart, and she sure as hell isn't a party girl. And Zach would never let anything bad happen to her. You know that.
I guess. Jude nodded, thinking it all through for the thousandth time. There seemed to her to be no good answer, no indisputably right way to go. For the rest of the evening, Jude wrestled with the question of how to be the best parent in this situation. She was still trying to figure it out at 9 o'clock, when the kids came running down the stairs.
Well?
Zach said. She looked at her kids, Zach so tall and handsome and steady in his low-rise jeans and striped American Eagle sweatshirt, and Mia in tattered blue jean capris, white t-shirt, and blue silk man's tie knotted off to the side. She had her hair drawn back in a ponytail that geysered at the top of her head. She'd come out of her shell since meeting Lexi, but she was still fragile, a little needy. She could get her heart broken so easily, could make the wrong decision because she was afraid of being laughed at. They were good kids, honest kids who cared about their futures. They'd never given Jude any reason to mistrust them.
Madre, Zach said, smiling, reaching for her hand. Come on, you know you can trust us.
Jude knew he was manipulating her, using her love to his advantage, but she was helpless to resist. She loved them both so much, and she wanted them to be happy.
I don't know.
Mia rolled her eyes.
This is like the witch trials. Can we go or not?
We said we won't drink,
Zach said. Miles came up beside Jude, slipped an arm around her waist.
We can count on your word, then?
Zach's face split into a huge smile.
Absolutely.
Your curfew is midnight, Jude said.
Midnight?
Zach said.
That's so lame. Like we're middle schoolers. Come on, Mom. Dad?
Miles said,
midnight.
At the same time, Jude said,
1 o'clock.
Zach and Mia surged at her, drew her into a fierce hug.
Stay safe, Jude said nervously. If there's any trouble, call me. I mean it. If you drink, and you shouldn't, but if you do, call home. Your dad and I will pick you up, and any of your friends. I mean it. No questions asked, no getting in trouble. I promise. Okay?
We know, Mia said. You've told us for years.
And with that, they were off, running for the sporty white Mustang they'd bought the kids last year.
You should have held firm at midnight,
Miles said when the car door slammed shut.
I know, she said.
It was so easy for him. When Miles said no, they gave up. When she said no, they tried harder, boring through her resolve like boll weevils through corn, until there was nothing left between them and what they wanted. Miles frowned as the red taillights of Zach's car disappeared into the darkness.
Senior year isn't going to be easy.
No, Jude said, shaking her head. Already she regretted the decision to let them go. There were so many things that could go wrong. On a warm autumn night like this, Amore was packed with customers. Summer was closing up shop, and everyone, locals and tourists alike, knew the cold season was moving this way. Lexi had worked part-time at this ice cream shop since sophomore year. Every penny she earned went into her college fund. She and her boss, Mrs. Salter, a 60-year-old widow with steel-gray hair and a penchant for layering beaded necklaces, worked the counter in perfect synchronicity, one ringing sales while the other scooped ice cream. Tonight, even though the place was busy, Lexi kept watching the clock. The party at the Eisner's place started at 9, and Mia and Zach were picking her up. Zach. He was the only fly in the ointment of her new life. In the past 3 years, Lexi had found a place where she belonged. Aunt Eva cared for her deeply. It was obvious, even though the woman wasn't demonstrative. Mia had become Lexi's other half, her sister. They were inseparable. And the Faradays had welcomed Lexi into their family with open arms, never judging her. Jude had become like a mother to her, so much so that on Mother's Day, Lexi always bought 2 cards, one for Eva and one for Jude. She always wrote thanks across the white space. Only Zach held back. He didn't like Lexi. That was all there was to it. He never stayed in a room alone with her for more than a second, and he hardly ever spoke to her. When he did, he looked away, as if he couldn't stand making eye contact. Lexi didn't know what she'd done to offend him, and no amount of reparations had helped. The worst part was that it hurt her feelings every time. Every time he looked away or walked away, she felt a little pinch of loss. But it was a good thing. That was what she told herself. It was good that he didn't like her, because she liked him too much. And one thing she knew for sure, had known from the beginning, Zach Faraday was off limits. At just past 9, she heard the Mustang drive up outside. She whipped off her multicolored apron and ran to the employee's bathroom for her purse. Snagging it off the wall, she glanced in the mirror just long enough to see that her makeup was still okay, and then headed for the front door, waving to Mrs. Salter as she passed.
Be good,
Mrs. Salter said with a happy little wave.
I will,
Lexi promised. She ran out to the Mustang and climbed into the back seat. The stereo was blaring so loudly that no one could talk. Zach backed out of the parking stall and headed out of town. In no time at all, they were turning onto a long, gravel driveway. At its end sat a quaint yellow Victorian with a pitched shake roof and a big white wraparound porch. Lights hung from the eaves,
illuminating baskets of flowers. When they got out of the car, Lexi could hear the distant buzz of conversation and the music, but there were very few kids visible. They were probably down at the beach, where the neighbors were less likely to see them, and thus less likely to complain to the local police. Zack came around the car and stood by Lexi. She tried to act casual. As usual, she couldn't manage it. She turned slightly and caught him staring down at her. Before she could think of anything cool to say, Mia came up beside Lexi, held her hand.
"Will Tyler be here?"
"Probably," Zack answered. "Let's go," he said, walking off.
Lexi and Mia followed him through the tall grass. When they reached the front yard, they saw the party. There were probably 75 kids in the yard. Most were gathered around the fire. The sweet smell of pot filled the air. Mia grasped Lexi's hand, yanked her to a stop.
"There he is. How do I look?"
Lexi scanned the crowd until she saw Tyler Marshall. He was a tall, gangly kid with skateboarder hair, who wore his baggy pants so low on his hips he was constantly yanking them up. Mia had had a crush on him since the end of junior year.
"You are beautiful. Go talk to him," Lexi said.
Mia's cheeks turned bright red.
"I can't."
"I'll go with you,"
Lexi said, squeezing Mia's hand.
"You too, Zack Attack?"
Mia said. Zack shrugged, and the three of them walked deeper into the party. They made their way past a pair of silver kegs and walked up to Tyler.
"Hey, Mia,"
Tyler said, giving her a bright grin. He held out a half-empty bottle, raspberry vodka. Mia reached for the bottle and took a drink before Lexi could even react.
"I guess that makes me the designated driver,"
Zack said. Then he added,
"Be careful, Mia." "You want a walk on the beach?"
Tyler asked Mia. Mia gave Lexi a wow look and followed Tyler toward the beach. Lexi was acutely aware of Zack beside her. He stood there, saying nothing, and yet she felt something in the quiet between them. Unable to help herself, she turned and looked up at him.
"Why don't you like me?"
"Is that what you think?"
She didn't know how to answer. There seemed to be something going on she didn't understand. She wished she'd never asked the stupid question in the first place.
"Lexi," he started.
Amanda Martin appeared in front of them as if by magic, holding a half-empty pint of Captain Morgan's spiced rum. She was a leggy redhead with full lips and eyes that slanted gypsy-like, Zack's latest girlfriend.
"There you are," she purred. "Took you long enough."
She wrapped her arms around him and melted against him. Lexi watched them walk away, all tangled together. He was kissing Amanda now, and felt a familiar sense of disappointment. Sighing, she wandered down to the beach. There she met up with some of the kids from the drama club. For years, Lexi had been hanging out with these kids, watching them all rehearse with Mia. They sat around on the sand, talking. Of course, college came up. It was the big topic these days. From the very start of senior year, they'd been talking about deadlines and applications and admission stats. Every day, it seemed like another university representative was in the library, talking to any senior who was interested. Weekend campus visits were becoming the norm. And the students from Pine Island didn't just go to downtown Seattle to check out schools. Oh no, their parents flew them all over the country.
"Lexter!"
Mia's voice rose above the noise. Lexi turned and saw Mia lurching toward her. Every time she stumbled, she laughed.
"I don't know how I got this drunk,"
Mia said, swaying dangerously.
"Lexi, how did I get this drunk?"
"Drinking, maybe?"
Lexi put a steadying arm around Mia and held her upright.
I love you, Lexi,
Mia whispered. But it was a drunk's whisper, stagey and slurred. She put an arm around Lexi.
You and Zack Attack are my best friends.
You're my best friend, too.
Mia slumped to a sit on the cold sand. When Lexi joined her, they leaned together.
Tyler said I'm pretty,
Mia said.
Do you think he means it?
He'd be a fool not to.
We danced,
Mia said, her voice dreamy. She swayed for a moment and then went still.
I can't feel my lips. Are my lips still there?
Lexi burst out laughing.
I think we better get you home. Let's go find Zack.
Lexi helped Mia to her feet and led her friend through the crowd. They found Zack in the shadows by the side of the house. Amanda was throwing herself at him. At least, Lexi thought she was.
Zack? Lexi dared. Mia's not in good shape. I think she needs to go home.
At that, Mia doubled over and vomited into the grass. Zack rushed to Mia's side.
Are you okay?
He asked, putting an arm around her. Mia swayed, unsteadily, wiping her mouth.
I don't feel so good.
Amanda, Zack said, can she stay at your house? I can't bring her home like this.
As if,
Amanda said, making a sour face.
I'm not leaving the party this early. It's barely midnight.
She gave Zack a long kiss and then walked away, flipping her hair as she headed back toward the keg.
Mia can spend the night at my house, Lexi said. Eva will be asleep by now.
Zack looked at her.
Really?
Sure. Zack guided Mia back to the Mustang and put her in the back seat. It was like trying to make cooked spaghetti stand. And by the time he was finished, Mia was laughing uproariously and spread out across the seat. Snapping her seatbelt in place took forever. Lexi got into the passenger seat while Zack started the engine. He backed up slowly and drove out to the main road. As they sped down the highway toward the bridge, his fingers tapped out a rhythm on the leather-covered steering wheel. The music coming through the stereo was unfamiliar to her, but its beat was strangely addictive. Mia was humming in the back seat, out of tune as usual. At the trailer, Lexi got out of the car and Mia was right behind her, stumbling out, laughing as she fell to her knees in the damp grass.
Let's go to our hill,
she said, staggering back to her feet. Zack rushed to his sister's side, held her up.
Hey, Mia, he said gently. Maybe you should go to bed.
Mia smiled drunkenly.
Yeah, that would be good.
Zack looked at Lexi.
I'll wait until she's in bed to leave, okay? You don't have to do that. I know you want to get back to Amanda.
You have no idea what I want.
Stung, Lexi went to Mia, took her from Zack.
Let's go, Mia.
She guided her best friend across the damp grass and up into the mobile home. In the living room, Mia collapsed to the floor, giggling and moaning.
Shh, Lexi said.
I'll just sleep for a sec.
Lexi left Mia on the carpeted floor for a minute and went back outside. From the porch, she stared at Zack. Slowly, she moved toward him. He was looking at her now, watching her, even. And his attention made something in the pit of her stomach flutter.
She's fine, she said.
What's your hill?
He said.
Mia and I hang out there. It's nothing.
Can I see it?
I guess.
Lexi was aware of his footsteps cracking on twigs and branches as they pushed their way through the heavy salal and brush. The path was so thin you could only find it if you knew where it was. When she emerged into the open again, it was onto a high bluff of untended land that overlooked a busy strip of the highway the glittering casino, and the black sound beyond.
I come out here all the time, she said.
It's cool.
Zack sat down on the soft ground. Lexi reluctantly sat beside him. They were so close she could feel his leg against hers. She waited for him to say something, but he didn't. Silence stretched out, turned uncomfortable.
So you guys are checking out colleges next weekend. That's cool,
Lexi finally said. It was all she could think of. He shrugged.
Whatever.
You don't sound very excited about it.
Mia says she'll die if we don't go to USC together. Don't get me wrong. I want to go to school with her, too, and I want to be a doctor like the old man, but...
He looked out over the casino and sighed.
But what?
He turned to her, caught her looking at him.
What if I can't cut it?
He said, so quietly she barely heard his voice above the distant drone of highway noise. She had known Zack for more than 3 years now, adoring him from a distance. She'd studied him like an archaeologist, culling through his words for hidden meaning. And never had he said anything like this to her. He sounded vulnerable and confused. The night seemed to fall quiet. The buzz of the cars faded. All Lexi could hear was the beating of her heart and the even strains of their breathing. She was reminded of all the times she'd waited for her mother's return, only to be disappointed, discarded. If there was one emotion she understood profoundly, it was uncertainty. Never in her wildest dreams had she imagined that Zack could feel the same way. It made her feel connected to him, in tune. For one split second, he wasn't Mia's brother. He was the boy she'd seen on that first day of school, the one who'd made her heart speed up.
I didn't think you were ever afraid.
He looked at her.
Oh, I'm afraid of something.
He leaned the slightest bit toward her. Maybe he was just shifting his seat on the hard dirt. She didn't know. She just knew how it felt to be afraid, and the way he was looking at her made it hard to breathe. Without really thinking, just feeling, she leaned toward him for a kiss. She was just about to close her eyes when he jerked back.
"What are you doing?"
he said, frowning. The magnitude of what she'd almost done knocked the breath from her. He didn't even like her, and worse than that, he wasn't available for her. Jude had made that clear. So had Mia. And Mia was what mattered, not some useless, baseless crush on a boy who fell in love with a different girl every week. Horrified, she mumbled an apology, got to her feet, and started running through the brambles and bushes for the relative safety of her mobile home.
Lexi, wait!
She ran into the mobile home and slammed the door shut behind her. Mia lay at her feet, singing a song from The Little Mermaid. Lexi stepped over her best friend and peeked out from between the curtains. Zack stood there a long time, staring at the closed door. Then he finally went back to his car and started it up. It wasn't until Lexi had brushed her teeth and put on her pajamas and crawled into bed with Mia that she let herself really think about what she'd almost done.
"You're an idiot, Lexi Bale," she said into the quiet.
"No, you're not,"
Mia said. Then she started to snore. The next morning, Lexi stood at her bedroom window, staring out at the falling rain, feeling sick to her stomach. She couldn't believe that she'd almost kissed Zack last night. What an idiot. What should she do now? Tell Mia the truth? Throw herself on her best friend's mercy and apologize for a moment of lunacy? But what if it ruined everything? And Zack would never tell. Or would he? Did he hate Lexi that much?
I feel like crap.
Lexi heard the mattress creak against the wooden slatted bed frame. There was a pinging sound as Mia maneuvered to a sit. Lexi turned slowly around, feeling a fresh wave of shame. Mia pushed the tangled blonde hair out of her eyes, which were a little dazed-looking, unfocused. A red scratch marred one pale cheek. Lexi had no idea how Mia had gotten the injury. No doubt Mia didn't either.
"Man," she said, "I got roasted last night."
"You did." Lexi went back to the bed, climbed in beside her best friend. Mia leaned against her.
"Thanks for taking care of me. I swear I didn't drink that much."
She banged her head back against the wall.
"God, I hope my mom doesn't hear about this."
Lexi couldn't take it. The truth was corroding her from the inside out. She had to be a good friend to Mia. She had to be.
"Speaking of last night, I did a really stoop..."
Mia sat up suddenly.
"Tyler asked me to the homecoming dance."
Lexi stopped.
"What?"
She and Mia usually hung out together on dance nights. Neither one of them had been asked to one of the dances last year. She felt vaguely jealous that this time she'd be sitting out the dance while Mia was having fun.
"You can come with us. Really, it'd be a blast. We could triple date with Amanda and Zach."
No. "And about Zach."
"What about him?"
Mia kicked back the covers and got out of bed. She stood there, a little unsteady on her feet, looking around the room for her pants. "They're in the dryer. You puked on them last night."
"Gross."
Mia padded out of the bedroom and headed down the hallway. The trailer shuddered at the weight of her steps. Lexi followed Mia, stood in the hall while her friend slipped back into her jeans. She was about to bring up Zach again when Eva came out of her bedroom.
"Hey, Eva,"
Mia said, with an obviously forced smile.
"Thanks for letting me spend the night last night."
Eva said,
"You're always welcome. Did you have fun last night?"
Mia smiled again, but it was ragged. Her skin was a little gray.
"We did. It was great."
She put an arm around Lexi.
"I don't know what I'd do without Lexi. She's the best friend ever."
Outside, a car horn honked.
"That'll be my mom,"
Mia said.
"She texted me last night. We're going to visit my grandmother today. I'd better go."
Lexi followed Mia to the front door. In her mind, she blurted out her secret several times, and they laughed about it. In truth, she said nothing, just stared at Mia's long blonde hair. At the front door, Mia hugged her fiercely.
"Thanks, Lexi. I mean it."
She drew back, looking a little uncertain.
"I'm sorry, you know. I shouldn't have lost it like that. You'll come to the dance with Ty and me, right?"
"Like I'm not lame enough already," Lexi said.
"Don't say that. We'll have a blast."
Outside, the car horn honked again.
"She's so OCD," Mia said, opening the door.
The white Mustang was parked out front, its engine purring, exhaust melting into the fog. Zach got out of the car and stood there, staring at Lexi over the Mustang's white roof. Rain pelted his face, made him blink. Mia flung her hoodie over her head and ran down to the car, getting in. Lexi was certain she saw Zach shake his head ever so slightly, as if to say, "It never happened. It can't happen." Then he got back into his car. Lexi watched them drive away, then went back into the trailer, closing the door behind her. He didn't want her to tell Mia. Was that what he'd meant? Eva sat at the kitchen table, her hands cupped around her mug.
"His car woke me up last night," she said, looking up. "So I went to the window. I didn't expect you to come home."
Lexi tried to imagine the scene Eva had witnessed. Lexi practically carrying Mia up the stairs, Mia collapsing on the floor, singing.
I thought we'd be staying at the Faradays.
I'm pretty sure I know why you didn't.
Lexi sat down across from Eva.
I'm sorry, she said, too ashamed to make eye contact. Aunt Eva would be disappointed in her now. Maybe she'd even wonder if Lexi were like her mother after all.
You want to talk about it?
I didn't drink anything, if that's what you think. I saw my mom drink, so I'm...
She shrugged. There was no way to put all of that emotion into a few careful words.
I didn't drink anything.
Eva reached across the table and took hold of Lexi's hands.
I'm no warden, Alexa. You wouldn't know it to look at me, but I remember what it's like to be young, and I know how the world works. A girl can get in real trouble when she's in that condition. She can make a bad decision. I would hate for you to get hurt.
I know.
I know you know. And one more thing. Mia and her brother aren't like you. Those two got choices you don't. They'll get breaks you won't. You understand me?
Lexi knew that. She'd known it from the first time she walked in the Faraday house. Mia could afford to make mistakes. Lexi couldn't.
I'll be careful.
Good.
Eva looked at her.
And about that boy. I seen the way he ran after you. You be careful there, too.
He doesn't like me. You don't have to worry about that.
Eva studied her carefully. Lexi wondered what she saw.
You just be careful around him.
Chapter 4 Jude loved her garden in October. It was a time of organization, of planning for the future. She lost herself in the work of planting bulbs, imagined how each choice would alter the garden next spring. And she needed that now, to find a kind of peace. The past 2 days had been stressful for her, although she couldn't exactly say why. She hadn't wanted the kids to go to the party, but they had, and it had gone uneventfully. Zack had come home right on time, and she'd hugged him tightly, smelling his breath, and sent him to bed. She'd seen no evidence of drinking, and Mia had spent the night with Lexi and come home smiling the next day. Apparently, nothing had gone wrong. So why did she think something had? Maybe Miles was right, and she was seeing problems where none existed. She sat back on her heels and clapped her hands together to release the dirt clinging to her gloves. Tiny black particles rained down, creating a lacy pattern on her thighs. She was just about to reach for the clippers lying in the dirt beside her when she heard a car drive up. She looked up, tented a gloved hand across her eyes, and saw sunlight glint off the silver hood of a brand new Mercedes. Crap, she muttered. She'd forgotten about the time. The car pulled up in front of the low stone wall that outlined her front garden. Jude pulled off her dirt-caked gloves and stood up as her mother got out of the car. Hello, Mother. Caroline Everson walked around her bullet car and into the vibrant garden with the bearing of an ice pick. She was dressed, as always, winter or summer, in a pair of black wool pants and a fitted blouse that showcased her toned, fit body. Her white hair was drawn back from her angular face. The severity of the style offset her bottle-green eyes to perfection. At 70, she was still a beautiful woman, and successful. That was what mattered to Caro. Success.
Have you agreed to be on the garden tour yet?
Jude wished she'd never revealed that little dream to her mother.
It's not ready yet. Soon, though. Not ready. It's beautiful.
Jude heard the derisiveness in her mother's tone and tried not to let it wound her. Caroline saw no point in hobbies. The end game was what mattered to her mother, and until Jude showed this garden on the island tour, she would somehow be a failure.
Come inside, Mother. Lunch is ready.
Without waiting for a response, Jude led the way toward the front door. On the porch, she slipped out of her gloves and gardening clogs, brushed the dirt off her pants, and went inside.
Sunlight poured through the home's 20-foot-tall windows, made the exotic wood floors glow like burnished copper. A soaring granite fireplace dominated the great room, which was decorated in soothing neutrals. The real star of this room was the view. Soaring glass panels captured a swatch of emerald grass, a layer of steel-blue sound, and the distant Olympic mountains.
"Can I get you a glass of wine?" Jude asked.
Her mother set down her purse so carefully it might have held explosives.
"Of course. Chardonnay, if you have it."
Jude was glad for the excuse to leave the room. She passed through the dining area, created by a long bird's-eye maple table and 10 chairs, to the open kitchen beyond. The only time she couldn't see her mother was when she opened the wood-paneled door of the Sub-Zero refrigerator. When she returned to the great room, her mother was standing at the end of the sofa, looking up at the huge canvas that hung on the granite stones above the fireplace. It was a gorgeous, abstract work of art, swiping, curling streams of amber and red and black that somehow managed to convey a buoyant happiness. Mother had painted it decades ago, and Jude still had trouble reconciling the work's glorious optimism with the woman who was standing in front of it now.
"You should replace that piece. The gallery has some lovely work now," her mother said.
"I like it," Jude said simply, and it was true. This piece had been her father's favorite. She remembered standing with him as a little girl, her small hand tucked in his bare paw grasp, watching mother paint it.
"Look at the way she does that. It's magic," he'd said.
And for a time, Jude had believed it, believed there was a kind of magic in their home. "I remember watching you paint it."
"A lifetime ago,"
her mother said, turning her back on the painting.
"Why don't you go clean up? I'll wait."
Jude handed her the glass of wine and then left the room. She took a quick shower and then changed into a pair of comfortable jeans and a black boat-necked sweater and returned to the great room, where her mother was seated on the sofa, her spine straight, sipping at the wine like a hummingbird. Jude sat opposite her mother. A large stone coffee table separated them.
"Lunch is ready anytime you're hungry," Jude said, crossing her leg. "I've made us a Waldorf salad."
At that, they lapsed into their usual silence. Jude couldn't help wondering why they continued this pretense. Once a month, they met for a meal, trading locations back and forth as if it mattered where they were. During a lunch of healthy food and expensive wine, they pretended to have something to talk about, a relationship.
"Did you see the article in the Seattle Times, the one about the gallery?"
her mother asked.
"Of course, you sent it to me. You said how important motherhood is to you." "And it is."
"Nannies, notwithstanding." Mother sighed.
"Oh, Judith Ann, not that old wine again."
"I'm sorry, you're right," Jude said, and not because it was the only response that would end the conversation. It was true. Jude was 46 years old. She should have forgiven her mother by now. Then again, her mother had never asked for forgiveness, never thought it necessary, even though she'd checked out of motherhood as if it had been a cheap motel. Fast. And in the middle of the night. Jude had been 7 years old and suddenly upended by grief. And yet, after her father's funeral, no one had thought to reach out for her, certainly not her own mother, who went back to work the very next day. In all the years that came after, her mother had never stopped working. She'd given up painting and become one of the most successful gallery owners in Seattle. She nurtured young artists, while entrusting her daughter's care to one nanny after another. They'd had no relationship whatsoever until about 5 years ago, when Caroline had called and scheduled lunch. Now, once a month, they pretended. Jude didn't really even know why.
How are the children?
Her mother asked.